From the Paley Center for Media in New York, this is Max Media. Here's Max Robbins.
Hello, everybody. It's a pleasure to be back with you today. One of my most favorite people working in the medium of television, Tom Fontana, is here with us. Tom has won just about every award with good reason for his programs. Going back to St. Elsewhere, Homicide, Oz, terrific series. Other series that he's been involved with you might have seen in their short lives. It's the Nature of the Beast, The Jury, Bedford Diaries, Money. I'm even going to surprise him and remember a pilot he did many years ago, never even got on the air, called Firehouse. That I think was a precursor to a show on that's on now, Rescue Me. But This was pre-9/11.
That's right.
At any rate, Tom's got a new series. It's going to debut on June 24th on NBC. It's called The Philanthropist. I wish you had a title that rolled off the tongue.
Yeah, I know.
But it's a great idea. It's about an extremely wealthy, billionaire playboy who says, I'm going to try and do some good with my money, and gets himself on a heap lot of trouble in a lot of exotic locales. And we're going to talk about that show and other things today. On June 23rd, the day before the premiere, Tom is going to be here with members of the cast of the show here at the Paley, and we're going to have the real premiere here in New York. So June 23rd, you can go online and buy tickets now. Tom, so good to see you.
It's good to see you again.
Indeed. Tell me a little bit about this project, the philanthropist, and I guess with your perspective, what's kind of changed now having a network show on NBC from the days of Homicide and St. Elsewhere?
The tales I will tell. Well, first of all, The Philanthropist is based on, I shouldn't say based on, it's inspired by a person who really exists. And I won't reveal his name, but if you come to the Paley Center on June 23rd, I will reveal it. So that's an extra reason to buy a ticket. Anyway, this is a guy who on our show, the character on our show is Teddy Rist is his name. And he has pretty much his whole life gotten everything the way he wanted it. He's a very successful businessman, married, had a kid, lived a full life. Private jet, the penthouse, the whole thing. And his son dies, and it completely throws him for a loop. He ends up getting divorced, a very public, very messy divorce. And a guy who believed his self-image, that he was in control of everything, suddenly realizes that he's not in very much control of anything. And he has this hole in his heart. He's grieving for his son. He's grieving for the life he had. And he decides that rather than writing checks to help people out, he's going to actually go places and try to help people out. And sometimes he's successful at it. A lot of times he's not. Or a lot of times what happens is he thinks he's going to do one thing and that doesn't work out. But something else happens that may or may not be better than the thing he intended. And we're shooting it. We've shot a couple of episodes in the Czech Republic. One of them is set in Paris. It's about sex trafficking. Another is set in Kosovo. We're shooting a bunch of episodes in South Africa that deal with Burma. The dictatorship in Burma and Kashmir, water shortage in Kashmir, doing one set in Haiti and one set in San Diego, if you can imagine.
Exotic San Diego.
San Diego.
I'm kind of floored, Tom, because, all we hear about is how there's all this budget pressure like never before for scripted television shows. And here you are often, you're actually in Kosovo. You're not on the back lot in Burbank.
Right. There's no green screen involved. Yeah, this may be the last one. We may be the last chopper out of Saigon because not that the show is crazy overexpensive. I just think that we're entering into an era where this kind of programming is maybe not what the network is as interested in. I think they're more interested right now in protecting their margins than they are trying to pump up the ratings. So I think we're moving, at least, you know, with NBC specifically, but also, you know, a lot of broadcast television into an era where this kind of programming won't exist anymore, which is my self-serving way of saying, please watch the show so I do like a 40 share so they have to renew it. Because if I do a 2, I'm going to be out, you know, I'm cleaning the street in front of the Paley Center.
I mean, I'm just curious. I mean, maybe take us through a little bit, if you could, the pitch process through this. As you say, it's not exactly the friendly. I mean, granted, you go in there with a great resume, a long history, a couple of very successful shows for NBC. Yeah. Nevertheless, hey, I'm going to shoot this show about a billionaire who's off in Kosovo one week. The next week, he's in South Africa.
Well, it was a lot. There was a lot of arguing about where it would be shot, and ultimately, what happened was because Universal, the studio, was really pushing us to shoot it in California on a back lot, you know, and you know, they kept saying, "Look how great Heroes looks," and I like Heroes as a TV series, but I said that's a cartoon. I mean, our guy does not have superpowers, so right off the bat, he's a little different than the guys on Heroes. And, you know, when it looks great on Heroes, it really looks great. But when you look at it and you go, that doesn't look so great, you know that they were like rushing to get it done. And we wanted to put our guy in real places so he would be in, at least give the audience a sense that he was in real jeopardy, as opposed to, you know, it's just a flat screen that can go away. And when you see the show, I mean, the first episode, which was shot in South Africa and Mozambique, but is set in Nigeria.
I've seen the trailer. That's what that's from.
Yeah. I mean, the jungles, it's a real jungle and real rivers and real stuff. And so, you know, not that that compensates for lousy storytelling. Hopefully it enhances it. Because I think, you know, we got a great cast. We've got James Purfoy, who was on Rome, played Mark Anthony on Rome, Neve Campbell, Jesse Martin. I don't know. If it's going to work, this should work. But if it doesn't work,
Try something else.
Try something else.
Where were you able to, I mean, in this new economy of network television, are there places where you can cut costs now where it doesn't show up on the screen, where, you know, 10 years ago or 15 years ago, you couldn't do?
Well, the biggest problem is always the above the line, because the above the line is really, and I say this being an above the line guy.
Yeah, that cast you have, they don't come cheap.
Nobody comes cheap. And, you know, we have a lot of producers so that's always problematic, and I think that which I think is a good thing, that we're entering an era where people's salaries are not going to be as inflated as they've been. It's one of these things that, on the other hand, you know, it's a little bit like when, GE says their profits are down 27%. And you go, geez, that sounds terrible. And then you realize they still made $8 trillion. So you go like, okay, well, I don't feel so bad for them. It's a little hard to feel too bad for the studios about how much money they're spending. My attitude is always, you know, if you don't want to spend the money, then get out of the business. I mean, I think that's been the problem with a lot of industries lately, is they don't seem to want to spend the money, not because there's no money, but because they haven't figured out what people really want, you know.
You're listening to Max Media. I'm here today with Tom Fontana. He's got a new show on called The Philanthropist. You've kind of been at the forefront in network and advertiser supported television of really pushing forward the creative limits where you can go with series television. And that really does go back to St. Elsewhere, Homicide. I mean, they were groundbreaking, each in their own way.
Well, and they also had advertisers who spent more money because they knew that the audience who was watching our shows were an audience that they wouldn't get if they were advertising, say, on Dukes of Hazzard or some show that had a higher rating, but wouldn't get the kind of...
So they were willing to pay a premium for quality, if you will.
Well, quality because they knew that a specific kind of audience would be watching the show, and they could sell them a Lexus, you know. So they would say they would spend the money on that. I'm not sure where the economics of advertising is now, except to say that, you know, obviously advertisers still rely on television more than any other way to sell their products. So it's not going to go away tomorrow.
But it's certainly challenged right now. Do you get a sense of with this show, were there creative compromises you had to make? Were there things you had to do? Were there things you looked at to make the economics work, like working with advertisers for kind of seamless product placement, if you will?
Well, you know, it's funny about product placement, and I had this conversation with Leslie Moonves in China on a Paley Center at the international conference we had in Beijing a couple of years ago. And I said to him, you know, he was ready thinking I was going to say, oh, I hate product placement. But the truth of it is, I would rather have a character in a show of mine say I want a Coca-Cola than say I want a Noli Cola, because I don't know what that is. I mean, it isn't in the real world. And so
in The Sopranos, when they were drinking Budweiser at the Bada Bing, it made sense.
It made sense. You know, they weren't drinking Sudsweiser. You know, I mean, they could do it on The Simpsons because it's funny, but you don't want to do it on a real show where you're saying these people live in the same world I live in. So I've never had a problem with product placement. And where I said to, and the people at NBC who deal with this, with product placement, are very cool, and they totally get it. And the only thing I said is, I can't do a show, I can't write a scene where somebody says, hey, I'd like a Coca-Cola. It's so refreshing. And it, I can't, you know, that part I can't do. I can have them ask for it. One of the things we're trying to do, and we haven't been able to do it in this first 8 episodes, but I think would be really great to do, would be if we could get the corporations that want to advertise talk about their philanthropy. Because all of these companies have these incredible foundations that do wonderful, wonderful work that nobody really, you know, never hears about. And so that's one of the things that if the show gets picked up for a second season, that I would really try to do is to get the, rather than it being product placement where we're drinking a Coca-Cola, you talk about what does the Coca-Cola Foundation do, you know. And I bring up Coca-Cola like they gave me some money to say it. I've said it like 15 times.
Get Bill Gates on your speed dial for the Gates Foundation.
For the Gates Foundation, yeah.
It's interesting with that. I'm curious as well, too. I mean, there over the years, heard you say that there, I think there was a time where you said, and maybe this was some experience that weren't too positive with advertiser-supported television. You did a groundbreaking series, Oz, that still, I mean, just still stands up. Seems like it could have been done yesterday for HBO. But at the time, I mean, boy, you pushed some boundaries. Was it hard to go back to a major network?
Go back to after being in Paris?
Yeah. How do you get you? Yeah, you're ready to go back on the farm of,
you know,
you only get to say this word this many times.
That's right.
Friggin' instead of.
Yeah. Friggin' was never a word I could really write. You know what it is? I think it's a matter of the writer's mindset. And I think of broadcast television in a very specific way, as opposed to cable, which I think in a whole other way. And I don't think I would pitch a show on broadcast television that would need the kind of groundbreaking stretching that a show like Oz did. Why would you try to do it on a broadcast network? You can do it on a cable network. So the kinds of things you pick to go to broadcast network with, now you say, okay, I'm not going to push those boundaries. The philanthropist pushes a lot of boundaries because this is a show without a normal franchise. He's not a lawyer. He's not a doctor.
Right.
He's not a cop. He's a guy who's, you know, a guy out in the world. And
not a lot
so,
of billionaires out there.
Not a lot of billionaires out there. We're finally representing those underserved Americans.
Is this your homage, your old buddy Dick Wolf?
But my, you know, the point is that I think if you choose a subject matter that's appropriate for broadcast television, you can still push the boundaries of television. You just don't have to be using swear words and having, you know, naked things.
Naked
was trying
things.
To, I was then censoring myself because I'm like going, who exactly is going to hear this?
With that in mind, too, I mean, and it's satisfying enough. I guess what the question really is, I wonder, too, if you, when you watch, for example, a lot of the stuff that's on FX now, or a couple of the series that AMC is doing, probably the prime example is FX for an advertiser-supported network.
Sure.
Is there a part of you like that, boy, those kids they don't realize.
No, I think it's great. I love FX and I love AMC. I'm very, you know, for me, anytime anybody's hour show is a success, it's my success because it'll make it, especially an original hour show like Mad Men, let's say, where you say, okay, you know, Christina Wayne took a huge risk doing that at AMC.
She was the head of programming there to
go.
That was an expensive show.
Expensive and
no names.
And you know, in a different time period than ours. I mean, that's
and the other thing too is that the minute somebody says period piece, it's like
you start thinking.
All they say is ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching.
That's right. That's right. Or you think Masterpiece Theater, where it's going to be kind of really interesting in a literary way, but maybe not as much fun as you want. So I you know, I think it's great. Whenever any show succeeds, I'm thrilled, especially if a show that shoots in New York, which not many are doing right this second. But, you know, every once in a while, I will be amazed. I'll see something or I'll read something that one of these younger showrunners says about their show. And I'll go, what is he talking about? I did that in 1974. You know, where they try to, like, say, and then I came up with a, you know, handheld camera, and you're like, what?
But it was funny. We were talking about today on the staff. We were talking about you coming in today, and one thing that's always just really struck out, been one of the things I've admired about what you've done is you're kind of a continuum. I think of Grant Tinker and all the people who got their start with him, and you know, behind such great that came out of his studio and. You, Stephen Bochco, Paltrow, and there's kind of been this kind of passing of the torch, if you will, that I think with Bruce Paltrow, who you work with on Saint Elsewhere, the late Bruce Paltrow, incredibly talented man.
He was totally my mentor. He taught me everything I know.
But it seems that what he did teach you, that you've been the mentor to, aren't there?
Well,
don't we
I've been,
see?
There's
you opened the door to one or two people out there.
Yeah, no, it's great. I have to say, I'm very proud of the writers who've worked with me and gone on to... you know, all the other shows, for everything from, CSI Miami, Nip/Tuck, they're just all out there working away. And
those are all people. Who are some of those people that
well, like Sunil Nayar, mm-hmm. Sean Jablonski, Sean Weitzel, Jim Yashimura, Julie Martin, who just finished doing Kings, Jorge Zamacona. And I'm going to forget like five of them, and they're going to call me and yell at me for forgetting them.
Well, so. David Simon, I'm sure,
Simon,
who worked with you on Homicide and then went on and did a couple interesting series himself.
Yeah, he's been doing, and now we're working together on a miniseries for HBO.
Really?
So,
can you talk about that a little? Is it premature to?
Yeah, it's a little premature because we're working on the Bible. It's based loosely on the book Manhunt. It's about the aftermath of the Lincoln assassination.
Ah.
And what we've done is we're taking it from the point of view of the least important people in Washington on the day Lincoln was assassinated. Because I've always had this thing about, you know, you can see a movie about September 11th about Rudy Giuliani and you go, yeah. But I want to see the movie on September 11th about the teacher who was in the classroom a block away from Ground Zero, or the guy who had the deli. So that's sort of what we're doing with Manhunt, is we're telling the story, all historically true characters. Who've never had any moment in the spotlight. You know, they're completely forgotten because you have these iconic figures of Lincoln and Stanton and Booth. So we're going to tell this story about this national tragedy through these unknown people's eyes. And I think it's going to be pretty cool. You know, the problem with David and I is we're both so busy that we mostly are writing it, yelling as we're passing to each other, him getting off a plane, me getting on a plane. You know, we're like, I'm like, and then act scene three should be about, you know, just like screaming at each other. So, but when we've been working together on it, it's been very exciting. And I think it'll be fun.
Do you any idea when you'll send a script to HBO or?
No, because we're just working on the Bible. I'm hoping soon. I mean, we've both been working on the scripts, so I'm hoping soon.
What else you got going on?
So much. It's exciting. It's a lot of fun.
How do you keep it all straight? I mean, and I'm just curious.
It's the alcohol.
Yeah. The single barrel bourbon.
No, you know what it is? I'm in television years. I'm an old guy. I'm 57 years old. And most of my contemporaries either can't get a job or, you know, aren't around. And so... And I'm lucky. I mean, I've been lucky my whole career that I made a chunk of money and got a lot of trophies. And so I'm at a point where I don't have to work, but I want to work if it's really interesting, you know, challenging stuff and stuff that's going to make a little noise, make a little difference, you know. Not that they all have to be Oz, because they don't all have to be Oz. And I frankly got Oz out of my system, so I don't need to do Oz the prequel. You know?
Come on.
No. But actually, somebody said to me, you should do another season of Oz. And I said, they're all dead. I killed them all the last season. It would have to be like, you know, I don't know who.
It was all
be.
A dream.
It was all a dream. That's right. But in any way, it's exciting to, you know, I'm developing a piece for MGM and the BBC based on the movie Ronin, the old John Frankenheimer film with De Niro.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the first time I've done anything where I've adapted a movie. So that's kind of interesting to, you know, the logistics of that. Jimmy Ashimura and I and Frank Pugliese are writing a miniseries for HBO called Courtroom 302, which is based on a book. And it's about the judicial system in Chicago, which this may come as a shock to you, is corrupt.
I know.
I don't know
why.
You
sound a little bit like the piano player in the whorehouse. This is Max Media. We're talking with Tom Fontana about all his various projects. Some idea what you've got. It sounds like a really full plate. I mean, especially with a network series about to launch. I'm curious too in this busy time for you. You alluded to a couple of things. I mean, with your perspective, I mean, where's this business going? What's going to be these things we call broadcast networks? Are they still going to matter? Where's the real creative action going to be? I'm just curious what you think.
Well, I mean, you know, anybody who would make a real prediction, you'd have to be suspect of automatically. I do think that change is good, though it's nerve-wracking. And so I think once all this shakes down, whether broadcast television is better for it, I don't know. But at least entertainment will be better for it.
You think the audience will have more access to experience?
I mean, my guess is that what's going to happen is that right now, you know, with the internet and all the different kinds of technology, the content is going to end up being professional. And so I think the shift will come and the quality of storytelling will be the same. It just may not be in the way that we're used to seeing it.
Does that mean in a way what you're saying is that sometimes the changes are what technology allows has a real impact on content?
I think what change does is it demands both, you know, the technological side, but also the creative side. The demand on people like me is to figure out a way to utilize the new technology and still tell great stories. And that's what we're, you know, that's what we're all working on right now. It's a lot of fun. I wrote a web series, which unfortunately lost the money just when the recession happened. But I haven't had as much fun writing anything as writing that, because these were 3-minute episodes, 10 3-minute episodes. And what it does is it forces you to really examine storytelling and say, you know, I don't need all that setup and I don't need all that crap at the end. It's just got to boom through, you know.
Get to the good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Once you clean away all the crap, it's actually, there's a lot of good stuff left over.
Has it given more freedom and for those working in, like yourself, working in kind of series television that in a lot of ways has almost a novelistic feel to structure, that it makes it in a way that, you know, that the install base of DVD, we have television on demand, so many of us, that it makes it that we could, it makes it a little easier where you're not pigeonholed into 10 o'clock on Friday night.
Yeah, well, anytime you can just decide when you want to see something, I think it's pretty liberating for the viewer. I think, well, I guess ultimately that's the thing. I think the viewer is going to benefit, and whether the industry benefits may not be as likely, but then who cares? The industry's been around a long time. Maybe it's time to shuffle it off. So.
Interesting. Well, interesting note to end on. I want to remind everybody that on June 23rd, Tom, you're going to be here, back here on campus at the Paley.
I will. I'll be naked. It'll be great. Okay, maybe not so great.
For a full frontal premiere of The Philanthropist. That's June 23rd here at the Paley. If you want tickets, go online. Premiering June 24th.
That's right. Wednesday's 10 o'clock, NBC.
From what I've seen, it looks like a great show. It looks like a lot of fun.
Thank
you so much for being with us.
Always good
to be here.
Tom
Fontana, Max Robbins here, Max Media. Thanks again, Tom.
You've been listening to Max Media, a production of the Paley Center for Media in New York City. We're on the web at paleycenter.org. That's P-A-L-E-Y center.org. And you can reach us by email at maxmedia@paleycenter.org.